Welcome, everyone, to the AI in Business podcast. I'm Matthew DeMello, Senior Editor here at Emerge Technology Research. Today's guest is Bill Armstrong, Chief Innovation Officer at Moss Adams. Moss Adams is one of the 15 largest public accounting firms in the U.S., providing accounting, tax, and consulting services to public and private middle market enterprises across industries. Bill joins us on today's program to discuss the impact on hiring practices and what the future of human resources departments will look like as these technologies become more commonplace in every kind of business. Without further ado, here's our conversation. Bill, thanks so much for being with us on the program this week.
Thank you, Matthew, for having me. I'm super excited.
Absolutely. We don't get to talk enough about AI's impact, especially for HR leaders. And I think it's especially really important to talk about this with folks from the accounting space who know what our friends in HR are going to, but can bring an analytical, dare I say, even data-based approach to a lot of these problems. So let me take a step back here and ask you, from that bird's eye view of knowing where the numbers shake out, what are the biggest challenges that a lot of HR leaders are facing given this point of AI adoption that we're seeing across the global economy in 2024?
Yeah, that's a great question, Matthew. I think that it goes back to an old adage of fear and greed, right? I think there's a part of the community that says, oh, you know, the fear side, you know, it's coming after my job, it's going to displace me. In the most extreme cases, public accounting is going away, or finance is going away, or any professional service is going away. And there's some studies that would actually support the job descriptions that are out there are going away. Then there's the greed side, is, oh, this is going to reduce my headcount. I'm going to be more efficient. I'm going to be able to deliver at a lower cost of service, whether you're an architect or an attorney or in finance, investment banking, or in public accounting. So those are the two broad categories that I kind of see.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Especially, I really appreciate how you've kind of phrased that cost of service, because I do feel for a lot of industries, and this is the problem we run into usually when we get later in the show, and then we're kind of half asking everybody, hey, where do you think this is all going? And everybody tends to have this, you know, oh man, don't ask me, you know, what the next 3 weeks are going to look like, let alone the next 3 years, you know, especially anything touching AI. I do find a little bit of the costs of service kind of across the board. A lot of the markets and the technology is still adjusting, and that seems still very much in flux. Just as an example, I'm sure you could probably relate being at an accounting office. In the legal space, we know that a lot of generative AI, the narrative goes, really, these LLMs, they can pass the LSATs. It's a matter of time before they build in that expertise and really be able to affect legal workflows. And then Stanford did a study not too long ago that all of my lawyer friends really, they've been briefed on it, et cetera, et cetera. The Stanford study says, at this point, LLMs still have a hard time weeding out even 75% of hallucinations in just legal inquiries. So we know that future's coming. We know the technology can get there and will get there, but the road between where we are and getting there now seems a lot clearer and a lot longer. And I feel like for a lot of, maybe for a lot of folks in terms of who you're discussing in the cost of service, that still might remain to be seen, you know, just that other side of the river where they can see, oh, there are the cost savings. That's where we don't need human beings really in these workflows. That's where we need to automate. That still seems like a bit of a fog of war, especially in generative AI. Let me know if I'm fishing too hard here. I know that's a really open-ended.
You know, I think there's two aspects to this. Number one, the technology is the worst it'll ever be right now today.
Yeah, right. That's the problem I'm trying to articulate.
You know, it's only going to get better from here. The other thing is that the vast majority of people, when they're using LLMs, they use it through some type of service. Mm-hmm. On the internet, maybe they've gone as far as having a private instance of it. But what that means is that they are untuned, unconstrained, and not specific to a use case. If you look at, you know, the studies that have been done around the most impactful use of LLMs, it's when they're highly constrained and embedded in a workflow process. And there's a study, you know, there's a study out, I'll make it very broad, but what the study said was that 50% or more of the tasks of most professional services providers are going to be subject to replacement. I can tell you that's true. I actually do believe that that's true. And I think that firms like mine or other firms and other industries are exploring that and having success. However, I want to make a historical analogy here. Because you know what? This is not a new inflection point. We've had this inflection point before, back in the 80s. You know, I remember, you know, I was in college, young and impressionable. And I remember that someone from at the time a Big Eight firm came out and they let me know that I had picked the wrong time to go into public accounting and probably wouldn't have a job in a couple of years because they had just started to implement something called the computer, the laptop.
Exactly.
And they were going to be able to now all of those 10, you know, 8 column paper and the manual entry with the 10 key that, which by the way, that was the job as an entry level accountant. Yeah. You were going to foot and cross foot and do some stuff like that. You were going to manually write stuff out or go back to the, it was very, so that job description was going away. And so there would now be no jobs for accountants. Well, all I can say is yes and no. Yes, those job descriptions went away and they were replaced by more complexity and more, you know, thoughtfulness, more cognitive requirements. And all in all, I feel like the work has grown. In fact, you know, some industries now have a shortage of professionals as a result of some of that. Like, so you made the comment, like most people can't see out 3 weeks. So here's what I can say. I do know that it will take longer to get to that destination than I think it should.
Yeah.
So I think it should be a year. It's going to be more than that. But on the other hand, you know, I'm a little bit of a futurist. You know, I'm in innovation, making stuff happen. I also believe that I will greatly underestimate the impact of the technology. Like, I don't think I can envision in my own mind.
Agreed.
So I think, like, if you look out, like, yeah, there's going to be wholesale disruption to the job markets. And as a result, it will create new problems and new jobs that will require different skills that can be less accessible to generative AI or other AI or LLM models. So,
yeah, I also have a weird feeling. Maybe this is my humanities background too. But I, you know, in these hype cycles when the knives come out and everybody's like, "Oh no, you're gonna lose your job. No, you're gonna lose your job." You know, like it kind of feels like everybody's still fighting in the dorm room in college between the accountants and the humanities folk, like who has job security. And I don't know, like everybody just take 10 minutes. We all want jobs, no matter what field of life you chose. My job's on the chopping block too. They can make, you know, they can make poetry now out of AI. But I feel like that's this unspoken little narrative in the hype cycle kind of going back and forth that feeds the fear and feeds the, you know, the cost of service, these forces that lead that misconception, the conceptions around the technology. Now that we've kind of settled on kind of what makes seeing that ground truth foggier, what do you see as kind of like, you know, in just brass tacks, the purpose of an HR department, you know, going into the future as it tries to acclimate to the real changes that we can at least see so far? What you see is maybe taking place a little bit out from a year from now, but you felt should happen in the next year.
Sure. I think the best place to start is with the raw material. So if you think about what HR leaders do is they take raw material out of colleges, out of universities, and then they train them within a domain specific space to help, you know, build careers and communities within those spaces. I think that's generally true in professional services across the board. Well, historically, you know, colleges have been and universities have been much more at the same pace as the external environment. Well, if you think about, you know, OpenAI released its first model, and I do know that, you know, machine learning started back in the 60s, but the pivot point, the real inflection point really was, you know, about a year and a half or so ago where OpenAI, you know, released its first model. And I think what happened then is you saw a very fast adoption of that. So now the question is, okay, so, you know, you have HR leaders who are hiring students who have never been exposed to generative AI, and, you know, or even machine learning. And now you're asking them to understand, for example, how they're built, like, you know, are all generative AI systems the same? And which ones do you rely on? And what's the pros and cons of each one? What are the built-in biases? I mean, when I say biases, I mean, what's the built-in data training sets? So let's say, for example, in finance, you know, if you have an LLM that's trained on European financial principles and you try and apply that LLM to an Asian market, you probably have a bias towards European financial ideas as opposed to Asian market ideas. And if you can't see that, you may turn out like one or two of those attorneys that filed briefs that maybe didn't understand how hallucinations worked, right? You know, HR departments are going to have to, you know, understand that people are now using LLMs to write performance reviews. They're starting to use it now to help write and optimize workflows that historically may have been at least partially part of the resource management effort of HR leaders. So there's a lot of things that are going to dynamically change. And I do think that as it changes, it will create opportunity. It just will, the nature of the beast.
Absolutely. Two factors seem to be at play here. And I really appreciate that in one of your last answers, you made the connection to even just the personal computer revolution. You know, me, my age, I'll date myself. I'm right there with you, Bill, albeit maybe like another generation down. But, you know, hey, I was like 12 years old. Like, you know, I was in sixth grade when the internet comes about. I'm in a generation that where, you know, oh, hey, we can, you know, you're young enough. We'll train you as this technology grows right up through the education system, right into college. And there's that point, and I think a lot of policymakers look back on it with some regret. We're seeing this in the AI revolution. Oh, we should have been there to really pass some smart regulations for social media that you know, in retrospect, really seem kind of like no-brainers right now. But at the time, we just said, hey, let's just see how this goes. I think you're seeing that in terms of your last answer, in terms of the HR approach. That, and it's another part of your answer as well, which is you made the point of, you know, people are using LLMs for performance reviews. It's getting into deep places. People are using this to write emails to their spouses. It's getting into every facet of life. Whereas back when the computer was invented, it might have been, hey, well, we know that you'll only use this in these accounting contexts. And that's the only way that we can kind of visualize the impact it might have on your future. Now we know, oh, well, we can see this now. We can see this with our own two eyes. It's going to get to the point where it's like a utility, where it's like water, or it's like the air we breathe. It's almost invisible because it's just so ubiquitous throughout all our systems. That to me seems like a big part of the reason that we know HR departments are going to have to act differently about this technology than we've seen in the last few tech revolutions. Even right down to something they probably experienced within the last 15 years, which is social media networks now need to become the new resumes, which is probably another kind of relative major switch, and the beachhead of AI's introduction overall to our society. Just wanted to get your impressions there in my interpretation or what you think of it.
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that. So one, I think the first place to kind of hit is the nature of how the technology progresses. So if you think back to historically, it's been very linear. And I think this is true of many things in history, right? There's linear components and then there's exponential components. So I think that you've been able to go from like, I used to use, you know, my fingers to count and add up a column of numbers. Then I got a 10 key, then I was able to use a smaller calculator, then my desktop computer, my laptop. That's very linear, you can see that. There are other things though that are more exponential. They're harder to kind of grasp how they would interact with something at scale. And there's a great finance example of this. You know, would you rather have $10,000 or would you rather have one penny today, two pennies tomorrow, four pennies on day three? And a lot of people that don't understand exponentiality of thought, they would go, oh, I want the 10,000 because no way you giving me a penny is going to ever equal $10,000. I think this is kind of that same process at play. The second part to that, and the second part to your question is I'm not the fear monger of it's going to replace jobs. Just like maybe 25, 30 years ago, I thought computers were going to replace me, but today that's so clear that not the case ever. And so I do think of it more as just like a computer, just like a 10 key, just like my iPhone or my Samsung or whatever smartphone you're using. I do think that, you know, generative AI and LLMs are going to augment the workforce, not replace the workforce. Now, I think that's different than saying, you know, I'm not saying it's not going to replace job tasks.
Yeah.
I think if you look in most professional services entry level, what the technology has proven is it can replace those tasks.
Yeah.
But now what you need to do is you need to, you know, your incoming lawyer, instead of thinking through the logistics of a brief and originating that, they need to be in more of a position of reviewing and understanding what the technology has performed.
Yeah.
Just like in accounting, right? Like, you know, I need to be able to understand how it's comparing two sets of financial statements as a reviewer, as opposed to actually performing the comparison to start with. So that's more of an augmentation and an adjustment of my skill set. doesn't necessarily reduce my total effort. I'm gonna be careful there. I'm not gonna say time. Maybe it does reduce my total time, but it certainly doesn't reduce my cognitive effort at play, right?
That's higher. That's becoming a new metric, and people are they know it's there. We don't have a tight definition for it. And I think if you want to get existential, I think that we're starting to really figure out we don't really know what we know what intelligence is now more than ever. That seems like a more concrete definition. The other half, consciousness, ooh, that's getting murkier. But without getting turning this into a philosophical podcast, one more item I wanted to pull apart in your answer about where HR departments are going. There's been this silent tug of war, and again, I won't make this a podcast about our education system, but there's been a tug of war between corporate HR departments and the educational system at large. Education systems feel like, well, if we're gonna, you know, guarantee job security for our graduates, we'd better make sure that in the classes where they're learning this stuff, they're getting trained on the softwares. We're doing that training, and we don't need the companies doing that training. That seems to be, in the face of AI, there seems to be a silent reversal of this dynamic, in that HR departments are now realizing, well, why even have the schools train them on whatever the software is, you know, in specifics, give us a bunch of Excel geniuses, you know, why have the schools focus on that when by the time they get here, we have to basically make them ready for any kind of new LLM that could come up or advanced tool that could come up in the next 3 years before even the next batch graduates. So it's going to be about building those fundamental skills that are about how fast can they acclimate to a new system? How well can they understand it? How well can they give it feedback? And maybe ensuring that background hand in hand with their education. It seems like that's kind of what's going on in terms of what you were saying in terms of how HR needs to think differently about how they're handling those human resources hand in hand with the training. Am I picking up that correctly?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You said you weren't going to go philosophical, but that's actually, this is a super philosophical thing. So the question is does it, if you, and again, sticking with professional services, is professional services something that is a skilled labor concept versus a arts and letters university type concept? Exactly. So I have a tendency to try, and I meet with quite a few universities, you know, in my role, I have a tendency to think that it's more along the build me good thinkers, build me good, you know, rational, you know, logical, logic driven individuals that can, you know, irrespective of what they ultimately go on to do, they can actually think through the problems in a, you know, articulate, well-reasoned way. And that's kind of a little bit at odds, I think, potentially with sometimes businesses want a pre-trained employee. But let's take law firms. You could have three different law firms, and they could all three, like, they're looking for quote unquote associate attorneys, but in reality, they're looking for very specific skill sets that meet their particular firm. No different than accounting, right? Like, accounting firms are accounting firms, but it turns out there's a huge difference between an auditor and a tax professional. And I think some of that is if you have good material coming out of universities, then it does become up to, you know, our HR leadership and our HR, you know, within their learning and development and their training programs to then make subject matter experts. And that process of making a subject matter expert is much easier if you have somebody who is open to how to learn, open how to test their own knowledge, how to validate, how to falsify their own, you know, the scientific, you know, I'm going to try this. Is it working because it's just I'm doing the wrong thing and it's going to work no matter what? Or is it working because I'm doing something special? Am I actually adding value to the workflow? Those kinds of things are, I think that's incredibly difficult. And I don't know where we sit with that exactly as an industry or a society, but there is a big difference there. And again, this is dated material, so it's probably 4 years ago. But yeah, if I recall correctly, I think Google was offering signing bonuses to get computer scientists to leave university early so that they didn't get trained on old technology.
Right. And that's kind of like the larger exact problem. But let's make this brass tacks, at least for the HR professionals tuning into this show. You know, we're asking a lot of, you know, like, oh man, where is this going to go? But in terms of where the rubber's hitting the road right now, they know they're going to have to make that tack away from, you know, specific bespoke systems, specific trainings. And how do you think generative AI can help maybe with that agility? It has a lot of strengths in that category as well.
So I'll give you a case in point. Historically, the way my firm would work, you know, public accounting, is you would gather a group of professionals together. they would then huddle up to develop a course or training material around a specific topic or even technology. So like, let's say, for example, how to use an LLM in professional practice. And that would require, think of the effort required for origination of that information. It's a lot. And again, I don't think we're bleeding edge here, but what we do now is we use LLMs to originate that content. It actually is 1,000 times faster. It's generally more accurate. It still hallucinates, but generally more Absolutely. Accurate. And now instead of having, you know, 5 people huddling together to do that, what you can now do is have 2 people now review that in review mode, and you've cut down your time to develop the training materials, whether it's for specific, you know, LLMs, or if it's specific to how you use an LLM in a certain case, using LLMs to simulate situations, simulate training scenarios, or even if you needed to, like, hey, we need to better educate our people around emerging data risk or cyber security risk or whatever. And then again, if you kind of step 2 is if you use the concept of embeddings within GPTs, within LLMs that are running as GPTs, that embedding now, you can actually constrain the hallucination to the point where it's incredibly accurate, and you can constrain the data elements that it uses to a very narrow subject matter domain. And all of a sudden, it starts to look and feel a little bit more like a professional with some expertise in an area.
Right. And that still is contingent, you know, even going back to our kind of philosophical inquiries, that's still contingent on a labor force from the education side that is, you know, thinkers and people who are outside of the box. And and we'll have to bookmark it there for perhaps a much larger podcast on vocation education and versus, you know, liberal arts. I'll say my old professors will love this episode because you heard it here, folks. Critical thinking is not going out of style in a very general sense anytime soon. And it's always great to hear from somebody who still has an austere career in public accounting this far after the invention of the personal computer. So, Bill, really appreciate you being on the show, setting a lot of people at ease and still not mincing words and not sugarcoating anything. That's exactly why we exact kind of guests that we love having on the show. Thanks so much for being here this week.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for having me.
Before we wrap up today's show, I'd like to do a little plug for an episode I know Bill and I will cover a little bit later in Q3 of this year. That episode will be titled What Gen AI Means for the Future of Accounting. Moss Adams recently released a survey showing that AI tools in accounting have gone mainstream and getting a pulse of how accountants feel about it. Perhaps somewhat surprisingly, 69% were bullish or at least optimistic about AI in their profession. And Bill and I will discuss what these numbers tell us, both about what's driving growth and the future of the industry. On behalf of Daniel Fagella, our CEO and head of research, as well as the rest of the team here at Emerge Technology Research, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time on the AI in Business podcast.